the man who sold the world Nirvana right here on Radio 3. Let's say hi to Morris Misalowski once again. How are you today?
Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday, Morris. Great to be with you. Sorry, I'm a little bit late, so we'll have to zip file everything for you today. I started off by saying that 9 years ago, you told a bunch of eager young lawyers that in 9 years, well, they wouldn't be needed quite so much. I'm sure that went down really well. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, did. I almost got sued for it. I love a good I told you so story. I don't know about you, but it really warms the cockles of my heart.
Yeah, once again, this is on the back. Morris is prolifically writing at the moment, so I'll give you the deets on his blog a little later. What did you do? Tell us.
So it's in the usual vein of doing keynotes about what tomorrow might look like for industries and clients, and this was one I gave a while ago. I said 9 years, literally was 9 years today. I was looking through the archive. Don't ask me why, it just was, and this hit me that this was a conversation. It hit me because I talked about artificial intelligence. 2016, it wasn't a conversation. It certainly wasn't a conversation for solicitors, lawyers, or they didn't think it was. But what I'd said to them was that the reality is that I thought 37% of all their jobs would disappear by next year. I'm a year ahead.
37%. Just picked a figure out of the air there.
Just picked a figure. I mean, I do that. You know, you put your finger in the air, make it wet and see what... But 37%, because what I looked at was that, again, we've talked about this often, that I don't think the job's all that important. I think the tasks that people do are, in other words, what do they do inside of their jobs every day to make it work? And when I looked at the things that many solicitors, lawyers did, all of which were necessary, all of which are wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people, but they weren't likely to be as needed for them to do it as in the future. One of the things, for instance, that I talked a lot about then was often solicitors will look for precedent, which means what happened before in this legal case. What did the jury say? What did the judge say? What was happening? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that required big legal libraries inside the firms. I mean, literally tombs and tombs, like a physical library of books. It required people that understood what was being looked for, what was the precedent, well, what case were they looking for, or even not as much information as that so they can go and find it.
Right.
It was all done very, very manually. And worst thing was, I mean, best worst thing was, it was often done by a junior, somebody who had just come into the profession.
Gosh.
It was kind of like the penance you paid, you know, like washing dishes and doing the rest. Not anything bad with those jobs, but they were just the lower order jobs. And as we now know and really think would be ordinary, that can be done in a split second on a keyboard. You just type in the sorts of things you want for and it comes up immediately. That was going to get rid of a whole lot of jobs.
Well, nine years wasn't that, you know, that wasn't that long ago in the big picture. I mean, surely you could do that.
It wasn't, but we've travelled so far in the last 9 years. I mean, really a long, long way. We've had, of course, COVID, which changed the way we worked. Can you imagine a legal firm sending its people home to work from home? Unthought of, but now it's become not ordinary, but common. We're talking about AI. We're talking about people's approach to the law and legality as well. It was once a deferential industry, meaning that whatever they said was right.
Should lawyers be worrying? I'm sure they're not that worried.
Well, the end result, of course, not. That we will need a legal industry. We will need lawyers. We will need all of those wonderful, incredible people.
Yeah.
But the routine nature under what they do, the day-to-day gritty stuff that they actually do or need to get done in order to do what they do really well, I've argued then and I continue to argue, increasingly that'll go to other ways and most probably artificial intelligence.
There's an interesting thing to throw in here, a really obvious question. The one criticism that gets chucked to AI is sometimes, quite often, it doesn't quite get it right for various reasons. I mean, in the law, you have to. So is that a big growth industry for AI?
Oh, it absolutely is, and that's where incredibly wonderful legal people come in because they need to look at this nonsense that's put together by AI and computers and technology and argue it before they argue with their client or the legal industry. In other words, does this make sense? Am I right? And why I refer to it as wise counsel. Because now what you're paying them, the hundreds and thousands of dollars an hour that they might deserve, is not to sit there behind a keyboard and do all this stuff that's really not in their skill set, but to use this to your best advantage to achieve whatever it is, the legal outcome you want.
Mm.
That's wise counsel. That's what we need to pay for into the future. And that's what I argued with them, not about how you do it, but about the output that you give, the value that you give. That's what people are going to pay you for.
I mean, what was the initial reaction when you said this? I can imagine you did go on to explain a few things, but did they, you know, not like...
No, they didn't. They, like many industries and engineers, accountants, there are a whole lot of industries that do a whole lot of thinking before they do their work. And I group them together, love them all, know them all, engineers, accountants, they're all the same. In other words, they're very deep philosophical thinkers. And for them to even spend a moment off kilter, you know, working in a direction that doesn't make sense to them initially, really sets them off. And you either have to, as I did there and do often, you either have to throw the hand grenade in because deliberately you want to stop their thinking and get them to, just for a moment, imagine differently. Or you've just got to go slowly at it. It slowly doesn't work, I found. You've got to throw the hand grenade.
Did you ever revisit this topic? Because, I mean, you often talk about
how
job natures are changing, and it's really interesting, things that we'd never think of. And you're like, well, actually, this is how. Did you ever revisit recently?
Yeah, many, many times. And I've worked with the legal industry for years, for decades as well over this. A lot of the things that I said then have come true. I mean, mostly come true, mostly come to be part of what people do now. And the legal firms, I mean, all of the big firms, whether they're accounting, legal, engineering or anything else, even the smaller firms now know that using technology well really helps their bottom line, helps their work and helps them stay alive and being able to do what they do. It's no longer a competitive advantage. It really is just an ordinary thing. And you've got to figure out, how do you tame the beast, being AI technology? Which one of those beasts do you use? And then when do you as a human stand up and stand in?
Well, again, looking at the article, as always, morrisfuturist.com, go to the blog bit, and he does put it out there. The keynote poll from Signal's already blinking red for me. AI was creeping into contracts, compliance, discovery. Well, that was quite a long time ago. So what did you mean by AI then?
Oh, exactly as I did now, but not the tools that we have, because by then, 9 years ago, we didn't have artificial intelligence tools, but I'd already seen them being quite ordinary in very, very large companies, being used by research in the way of universities. It was very cumbersome and nothing like our ChatGPTs and Groks and whatever else we use now.
Oh, yeah.
But the notion was there. And remember, artificial intelligence goes back to the 1940s. The first kind of iterations of artificial intelligence were actually around World War II. That's when we started developing the theories and the practices of maybe what it could become. It's had a long journey to get to us today.
Actually, you've just mentioned one word that I want to talk about one of these days. You say Grok, and that's Elon's AI bot, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's one of the new ones. And if you wake up every morning, as we hope we do, you'll hear another 20 of them.
Yeah, people are raving about this, though, and I bet they feel really unclean for doing so. But what do you know about it?
It's getting a lot, as you said, getting a lot of rave reviews. But again, so does everything else. I mean, truly, Phil, every time I pick up a review, somebody's raving about it being the best thing since. And this is another one. It's supposed to be swifter and faster and better and all those wonderful things that we want these things to be. It most probably is. I've not found a great everything artificial intelligence. As with most things, there's really, really good ones to do something, really good ones to do something else, and I think that's still where we're at. This is not the one size fits all, but it's a good part of that, depending on what you want it to do.
When DeepSeek came out, the big thing everybody was raving about essentially was, it's free. What about this boy?
Oh, yeah, free is always good, and free is for most of them. Most of them give you some version of free. You know, they either throttle it, which means it's not as fast, or you can't go as deep on them, and you've got to pay a bit more to do a bit more. But most of them have a free model, well worth trying. Another thing that's interesting, if you're going to go down the road of trying them, and if you do use a number of them, is to do this really strange thing, and I do it from time to time, is you actually get them to compete against each other.
Okay.
So you get something in ChatGPT, and you get it as best as you can. You know, you play with it and tell it what you want, and then you throw it into Grok and you say, look, this is what ChatGPT came up. Literally, you can do better than this. And it's almost like the kids in the schoolyard. And then you keep going. So I will sometimes use two or three just to literally with this is the best that they had. What do you say to that? And they will come up with a completely different way. And then you've got comparisons. Mm. You often find that the last one is actually quite extraordinary because it seems like they are competing against each other. I know they're not, but it seems like it.
I wouldn't mind having a look at this one. Simply, I mean, of course, it says it's advertised as having a sense of humour. Does that mean it doesn't get prissy with you if you ask it a vaguely sensitive question?
Most probably not. They're all being tuned down. They're all being made more human. All of the search engines are. This one says that it's very good at it. In other words, as you said, it basically talks to you like a mate, like a friend, and it gives you what you want and doesn't get too upset if you keep asking over and over again. But that's really true of all of them. As we, I think we said it last week, that if you take these things too seriously, then they take you too seriously.
Yeah, they're very
and you've really got it. You've got it's a petulant child. I keep saying over and over again, treat it like that. You know, give it a please and a thank you occasionally, and get it to do the work it's meant to.
They seem to be quite reactive, and that's something you taught us. That's pretty interesting. But we were joking the other day that Suno has now got a new model that says it basically allows you to use naughty words, and that's essentially what humans want to do when they're playing with this stuff. They don't want to be told, "I'm sorry, I cannot do that."
Yeah, you're actually reading less and less of that now, Phil. I mean, again, you're right, because we used to hear that a lot when ChatGPT's version came out about a month ago. It drove me crazy in the newest upgrade, because everything I wanted, everything, it didn't matter how inane, how simple it was, there was some objection to it. You know, something out there in the world wouldn't let it do it.
Yeah.
And I noticed a couple of days later it had tamed itself and thought, look, let's just stop saying that. Let's do what we can do.
Brilliant. Well, 9 years later, we're here. So really, really quickly to sum it up, it means that the whole training model for these young legal brains has actually changed.
Yeah, it has. And it's also made it difficult for many to enter the industry, because it said the entry level was basically around doing this grunt work. Grunt work doesn't exist.
Great.
So really, what do these new graduates do? The answer is lots, and there are still jobs for them, but the reality of grunt work just isn't there anymore.
Nice one, Maurice. Thank you so much. If you want to read more about this, tons of detail, morrisfuturist.com. Go to the blog section, and it's right at the top. Take care, mate. I will chat to you soon.